Welcome to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with your host, Lucas Carlson. From Docker and Linux containers to programming languages and web frameworks, we interview technology and thought leaders around the world every week. This week's interview is brought to you by CenturyLink Cloud, the world's fastest self-service enterprise-grade cloud.
Hello, this is Lucas Carlson from the CenturyLink Labs podcast. This week I've got an awesome guest for you, Luke Marsden from ClusterHQ. Now, ClusterHQ might be a company you've heard of. They were previously known as Hybrid Cluster. They are working on some really interesting problems because they're working on some of the data persistence backend problems behind Docker. So I thought it'd be really interesting to pick his brain. It's one of the most difficult parts, especially if you're trying to do anything with databases, if you're trying to do anything with persistence. It's one of the most difficult parts of using Docker right now, so they're tackling a huge problem. So I thought it'd be really interesting to pick his brain, understand what he's working on, how he sees the problem, how he sees it evolving, and really try to get a better understanding of what is persistence and data storage mean for containers and how is that changing over time. So Luke, it's really great to have you. Thank you for coming on. Can you tell our audience about your background?
Yeah, sure. Cool. Well, thanks very much, Lucas. I appreciate the opportunity. So yeah, a little bit about me then. Sort of started out in 2001 with a shared web hosting company that I started with a friend of mine. And I was then fortunate enough to go and study computer science at Oxford, which led me to start thinking about things from a very distributed systems perspective from the CSP course there. So when I finished my degree, I was sort of inspired to try and solve some of the practical problems we had in the hosting company, which were threefold: hardware and software going offline, and I was one of the people who had to personally go down the data center to swap out a failing disk, websites getting spikes in traffic and needing to be manually moved from a shared environment to a dedicated environment, and thirdly, customers making mistakes and us needing to go in and manually roll back to backups or snapshots for them. And so when I looked around for ways of solving these three problems, and at the time, so this was 2008, everyone was going sort of crazy about virtualization and shared storage, but to be honest, I didn't want to get a SAN and put it in the middle of our architecture diagram. I thought there must be a better way. So I discovered ZFS, which is an incredible file system that allows you to do lightweight snapshotting and replication of just the differences between snapshots from one node to another. And on top of this, built a distributed storage system that was provided backing store for containers. So even as far back as 2008, we were looking at solving storage problems for containers. It was just a different context in which we were operating. So we've more recently been able to take a lot of that technology that we built and start applying it to the Docker ecosystem to solve that big problem that you referred to in your intro.
Very cool. So can you tell our audience, what is Flocker? And what's the difference between Flocker and ClusterHQ? What does ClusterHQ as a company do, and what does the Flocker project do?
Sure. So ClusterHQ as a company is 100% focused on building Flocker, which is an open source project. And the mission with Flocker is to solve the data problem for Docker. And so let me, I guess I'll try and explain what I mean by that. The big problem at the moment, if you have data services in containers, is that as soon as you put a data service, be it a MySQL database or a MongoDB or even a RabbitMQ or anything that has state, inside a Docker container, best practices dictate that you attach a volume from outside the container inside the container, and that the sort of database, maybe it's a Postgres database, for example. Actually, Postgres is very popular. The Postgres database will be continuously writing changes to that volume, meaning that that container then gets stuck on that physical host. You lose the promise of portability that people value so much from Docker as soon as you move into data services, because you can move the container around, but you can't, it's not easy to move the data around. And so Flocker's all about making it easy to manage containers and data together so that you can move them around between different machines.
And how does Flocker do that?
So building on the technology we built for our previous project, we use ZFS, which allows us to take And this is ZFS on Linux, by the way, just to be clear. So it's obviously it works with Docker, it's ZFS on Linux, and ZFS on Linux is really good and stable now. The way it works is that each container, each Docker container that needs to have state, gets backed onto its own independent ZFS file system. And the reason I love ZFS for this is that ZFS is a beautiful storage analog for containers, because ZFS file systems are lightweight portable file systems, and you need lightweight portable file systems for your lightweight portable containers. The way that Flocker works is in two pieces, really. The first, you can think of it kind of like a sandwich. So it's a container sandwich with containers in the middle, a network proxy on top, and a storage layer underneath. And then you can have sort of multiple sandwiches for multiple hosts. And that means that we can control the requests that are coming in for the proxy layer. So you can send any request to any host for any container. And we can also control the storage, so we can control the Flocker volumes that are attached. So the way that works then is that if we want to move a container with its along with its data from one host to another, we can just synchronize the storage layer and the network layer in conjunction. So we can synchronize the data in real time, and then we can switch the network proxy over to point to the new location. And the upshot of this is that you get fantastic improvement in terms of operational manageability of containers, which we think is an important aspect of Docker when you want to run it in production. So yeah.
So what is what's the difference between using something like Flocker with ZFS versus using a more traditional like NFS or some sort of underlying traditional persistence layer?
So that's a great question. I guess it sort of goes back to that design decision that we made in 2008 not to put a SAN in the middle of the architecture diagram. And that has become even more important now in the cloud, because in the cloud you don't get a SAN. And in fact, if you turn one of your cloud VMs into an NFS server, then you're basically putting a big single point of failure in your architecture. And especially in the cloud, you're told to design for failure. The whole sort of Netflix story about the chaos monkey means that if the chaos monkey hits your NFS server and that goes down, then you're kind of screwed. So it's important, I think, to design for local storage, but to retain that promise of portability of those containers between different hosts that are running on local storage.
Got it. And then for the data part, does it sync automatically, or is it more of a, if you need it to move, is it a atomic transition? How does that work?
So the important thing to note about Flocker 0.1, which we launched just about 3 weeks ago, is that at the moment it's just a command line tool which reaches in and interacts with some servers to do static configuration. So the way that Flocker works, and you can play with this, by the way, we've got a Vagrant image on our website, so if you go to clusterhq.com and just hit Get Started with Flocker, then the way that that works is that each sort of action that you perform using Flocker is a one-off action that a user does. And the way that Flocker works is that you give it an application manifest and a deployment manifest. And the application manifest is a lot like the description that you get, a YAML description that you get with Fig. And the deployment manifest basically maps those containers, so you define containers in the application manifest that are linked together. And the deployment manifest describes which server you're deploying each container to. And so to answer your question about is it automated, at the moment, the movement of that of containers around but with their data only happens in response to a manual user action. So what you do is you can, with Flocker 0.1, really the one feature that it has is that you can change the deployment manifest to move a container and its data from one physical host to another, and then you rerun Flocker deploy, and it will do all the magic in the background to reroute the network layer and reroute the storage layer.
I see. So it's an atomic transition?
Yes. It is. I mean, at the moment in 0.1, we just shut down the container, move the data, and start it up again. So there's a period of downtime. But if you look at our heritage with what we built in the hybrid cluster project, we're moving towards a completely seamless atomic migration, basically.
Can you tell us more about the hybrid cluster? What is that heritage?
So sure. With hybrid cluster, we built up a large feature set. We had HA built in, so you can have a stateful container, and if the machine it's on fails, then we fail over to a very recent copy in a different, on a different machine, or even in a different data center. We had a feature called auto-scaling, or auto-juggling, we called it, which there's sort of a bit of an essay on our blog, actually, called Data-Focused Docker Clustering that you might be interested in taking a look at.
Great, I'll link to that in the show notes.
Okay, cool. And that talks about this idea that stateful things scale vertically while stateless things scale horizontally. So if you're talking about scaling a stateful application like a Postgres server, then you scale it by moving other applications, by moving other containers away from the server that it's on if that container is getting busy. So that's how our auto-juggling feature worked in hybrid cluster. So that can allow a stateful thing to automatically scale if it gets a spike in traffic. And then there's also what we sort of jokingly call the time machine, which allows users to see those continuous snapshots that are being taken of their data and roll back. We're also interested in adding a feature around lightweight staging environments for Flocker, which wasn't in hybrid cluster. Because we've done a bunch of customer development, and something we hear over and over again is that customers are saying, hey, I've got one staging environment, and if one of my developers in the office wants to use it, they literally have to stand up and shout to everyone in the office, like, I'm taking staging. It's like a really old school locking mechanism. And so what we'd like to do to solve that is to make it really easy to clone 10 copies of even a complex microservices-based Docker application. And clone the data services 10 times so that each developer can get their own lightweight staging environment. So that's one of the things we're working on.
That's super cool. And did hybrid cluster use Docker too, or just containers?
No, hybrid cluster was based on FreeBSD actually. So we used FreeBSD jails.
So one of the big differences between what your legacy with hybrid cluster and where you went to with ClusterHQ is more Docker centric?
Absolutely. Yeah, we noticed this huge opportunity to solve some of these big problems that the Docker community haven't quite figured out yet. And so we're trying to get more and more engaged in that community and to help out and try and solve some of those problems. And to that end, we're interested not in providing another orchestration layer ourselves, but in fact integrating into all of the different orchestration options. So I guess you heard it here first, but we are very interested in integrating with, for example, CoreOS or Kubernetes or Mesosphere.
Nice.
And perhaps
that's
all
awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. So what are the biggest challenges you see in people adopting Docker today and containers? It seems like storage is absolutely one of them. Are there others?
Yeah, so Docker did a great job getting to 1.0, and it's clearly won the hearts and minds of developers in a big way, and it's great. It's opened up a huge sort of set of opportunities around containers, which I believe deserve to happen. But despite that, when we talk to real customers, they say, if I want to deploy my application in production, then by definition, I want to deploy it onto more than one physical machine, for performance reasons, for scaling, and for resilience. And so these two big recurring themes that we see coming up are, well, when I move from a single host deployment to a multiple host deployment, the two big problems are storage and networking. And I'd say that that's where we as a community have a lot to figure out still. And we're just at the beginning of that road.
Got it. What do you think about what the Flynn guys are doing? Because they're also working on some persistent state issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, and it's great to see the Flynn guys tackling this head-on. The difference in approach is that we're taking a generic approach to being able to replicate arbitrary file system state using the ZFS layer, whereas the Flynn guys are building on top of the built-in replication mechanisms that exist in some but not all of the data services that you might want to run. And I believe that there's room for both approaches. And I spoke to the Flink guys actually when I was in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and they agreed. So there's interest as well in adding support for this more generic form of data management in a future release of Flink. So yeah, both approaches have their pros and cons, but I like to think that a generic approach to data management can open the doors to all types of data services, and even legacy applications which are stateful, like WordPress, being hosted in a reliable, operational way, sort of operationally manageable way with Docker.
Do you think that the state problem is fundamentally different in virtual machines than it is in containers?
That's a great question. Yes, I think it is. And the reason that I think it is that when you're handling state for containers, you are exposing a POSIX file system rather than a block device, or at least I believe you should be. You could expose block devices. You could expose individual block devices to individual containers, but to me that seems like a sort of impedance mismatch, right? Because you might have one big VM with 1,000 containers on it, and then if you try and attach 1,000 block devices to that one big VM, well, I've heard some horror stories actually about how that just goes terribly wrong on EC2 because it just wasn't designed to do that. So this sort of goes back to this point that I made earlier about how I feel that ZFS is a nice storage analog to containers because you're allocating your storage out of a pool. So all of the containers on the host can share the entire local pool of storage. And you want granularity at the container level. So you want to be able to move individual containers and their individual storage volumes around between different physical hosts in the cluster. I hope that sort of goes some way to answering that question.
Definitely. What container projects are you most excited about seeing right now? What's on your radar for things to watch?
So we've just launched today. And seems to be trending on Hacker News at the moment. So Weave is a really interesting project by the founders of RabbitMQ. And what they're doing is they're building a layer 2 Ethernet switch effectively into a cluster of Docker containers. And one of the really nice things that this allows you to do is to join up an on-premise network with some cloud instances. And for those containers to feel like they're just on the same network segment. And I think that is really interesting from the perspective that it could allow you to live migrate. I mean, if you combine our technologies, then it allow you to live migrate a stateful service from on-prem into the cloud or back again completely seamlessly. And I think that's pretty cool. And I'm also excited to see sort of the start of a sort of sense of agreement around orchestration. I definitely feel like people are starting to think about Kubernetes seriously, and I think that's going to be an important part of our future.
Cool. What do you think is next for containers? Where do you think it's all going?
So I think that for a certain class of workloads, especially Linux workloads, we're going to see so I think it's interesting how Docker has managed to, on one hand, provide a replacement for sort of the management tools for installation of things, so Chef and Puppet. And on the other hand, it's also sort of started to overlap a little bit with the functionality that you get from virtual machines. And so I think that's actually a really powerful combination. Providing a consistent way to deploy stuff is a big win. And I think that you're going to see containers start to encroach more into both of those markets.
Awesome. Can you tell us about how you think ClusterHQ is going to monetize in the future, whether it's going to monetize Flocker or services around Flocker, what that might look like? And also for our audience who might be interested in working with you more, are there services that they can get from you today, or is that in the works?
Yeah, of course. And so this is an important question, of course, for any open source company. because at the end of the day, we need to make money. And so I take a leaf out of Martin Mikos's book from MySQL, where he talks about needing to build, and actually he describes it as the most powerful force in the world, open source, which I like, that you need to tread this fine line between building an open source technology which is really powerful, really production ready, and which could support production workloads for thousands or millions of customers and nodes, and at the same time being able to draw a hard line of differentiation, so that if someone who really loves this thing wants to go to their boss and say, can we get the paid version, then they actually, it's that conversation with their boss typically where they need some hard line of differentiation to be able to convince them that they shouldn't just get it for free, because it has to be an economically rational decision. So that's just a long way of saying that we're still figuring out exactly what to open source and what to make into a sort of a proprietary add-on at some point in the future. But our focus 100% in the next 12 months at least is around building our open source community. And interestingly, off the back of the Flocker 0.1 launch, we already had a few people reach out to us on our IRC channel, which is /ClusterHQ on Freenode, by the way, and start talking to us about some enterprise deals that they're working on where they have a need for this. So it's exciting times.
Great. where else can people find more about Flocker?
So if you go to clusterhq.com, then we've got a pretty comprehensive docs section. And there's also our GitHub. Everything's open. It's under the Apache 2 license. So come and check it out. We've also got a Google Groups user group, which is Flocker users. And like I said, we're #ClusterHQ on Freenode.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate your time and really appreciate picking your brain about these ideas. I know things are moving really quickly, and it's really good to talk to people who have been in the industry a bit and really thought about these container storage problems for longer than even Docker's been around. So it's good to talk to you. Thank you for letting us pick your brain.
Yeah, no problem. No, great stuff. Thanks very much, Lucas.
Thanks for listening to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with Lucas Carlson. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, centurylinklabs.com, to your friends and colleagues. Be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous podcasts. This has been a CenturyLink production. Join us next time for another edition of the CenturyLink Labs podcast.